Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, March 15th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, "A Saturday in Sweetwater at the Rattlesnake Roundup," by Morgan Taylor Thomas. The only other time I've ever been to the Rattlesnake Roundup barely remains a memory. I can't even remember the year, let alone what went on. So my only interest in last Saturday's event came from my obnoxious, born and raised in a small Texas town pride, and an overwhelming desire to be a cowgirl. Don't ask me how rattlesnakes equate to cowgirlness, they just do. Based on my pre-adventure research, I felt like I created a pretty good idea of what to expect. I mean, how many people really want to do a bunch of rattlesnaking anyway? Well, apparently a lot. And not just Texans, too. I rolled up to the Nolan County Coliseum, sipping on my energy drink, at about 9 a.m., just an hour after the doors opened. After waiting in the parking line for 30 minutes, I decided to follow the lifted Ram 2500 in front of me on an off-road experience to a backside parking lot. After debating if my only form of transportation would still be there when I got back, I headed towards the Coliseum. This is when I realized the Rattlesnake Roundup would be much more than I anticipated. Covering an entire field stood a pop-up flea market. Everything from second-hand clothing and boots to 50-year-old bottles of Coca-Cola and vegan self-care products hung under blue and white tents. At first, I thought I'd landed at the wrong event center. Yet, waving in the wind, flew a fried rattlesnake flag. As I got further along in my quarter-mile walk to the Coliseum, I could see the row of third-party concession stands and sponsoring store trucks lining the entryway. On the other side, hundreds of people walked around munching on a snack, waiting in line to get in, and just having a good time. Once inside, my fellow herd of patrons walked down the stairs to the arena floor, where the event was happening. Vendors selling knives, leather belts, t-shirts, snakeskin apparel, and more filled every corner. However, the most enticing areas were the snake pits. Demonstration, milking, skinning, and viewing. At the demonstration pit, Sweetwater JCs rattled off rattlesnake facts while holding the snakes close to guests' faces for pictures and petting. In the milking pit, JCs clasped the rattlesnake's fans to a milking pot, making the reptile think it was biting prey, ultimately producing venom which collected at the bottom of the jar. As for the viewing pit, hundreds of snakes lay on top of each other for people to gawk at, while the potent skinning pit, well, you guessed it, showed the degutting and skinning process of a rattlesnake. In total, I later found out from a JC, over 1,000 rattlesnakes could be found on the Coliseum floor. Other attractions included your basic run-of-the-mill carnival, a knife-gun coin show, and guided hunts. Yes, you can pay to go catch and kill your own rattlesnakes. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of events like the Roundup, and on more than one occasion, I considered standing with the PETA protesters found at the front door. However, I think the Sweetwater JCs deserve a lot of credit. During one demonstration I attended, a volunteer JC named Jason Rose explained the reason behind the Roundup, how the snakes' mating habits and reproduction stats make it a threat to the community, and how, without the Roundup, they take over the town, killing livestock and children just like they did in 1958 when the first roundup started. The JCs are proud Sweetwater folk who are dedicated to keeping their community safe. And here in Texas, sometimes that means maintaining wildlife populations. Furthermore, I found the people attending the roundup weren't there because they enjoy killing wildlife. Well, at least they weren't obvious about it. Instead, they were there for the commodity and community the roundup represents. For 65 years, the Sweetwater Rattlesnake Roundup has been one, if not the most, economically influential event for the Nolan County town. People from all over the state and country come to West Texas for the event to learn about Texas wildlife and share an experience with other intrigued individuals. It's a place for local farmers to educate fellow community members on the importance of snake safety, an opportunity for small businesses to expand their customer reach outside of the Sweetwater radius, and a chance for people to come together to experience a truly full-blown Texas festivity. Is the roundup for everyone? Absolutely not. However, it's also a way of life for a lot of West Texans, and that fact can't be ignored. This article is entitled, Five Facts I Learned at the Rattlesnake Roundup, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. I saw a lot last Saturday at the Sweetwater Rattlesnake Roundup. Some I enjoyed, and some not so much. As someone who doesn't hunt, barely eats meat or animal byproduct, and almost worked for a renowned animal rights organization before coming to the Reporter-Telegram, I don't think I prepared myself enough for the amount of aggression used on the snakes during demonstrations. Now, I'm not saying the Sweetwater JCs stood in the snake pits and threw the critters into the wall or went around chopping their heads off in front of guests. I understand they're dealing with the third deadliest snake in Texas. But the interactions still made me uncomfortable to watch. I'm not sure I'd ever go back, nor do I support the pageantry of the roundup. However, one volunteer JC managed to, somewhat, ease my apprehensions, and, quite frankly, should be in charge of more educational programs for the annual event. Jason Rose, leader of Saturday's bus tours, presented an hour-long demonstration about 5 minutes from the Nolan County Coliseum. After walking up a small hill, patrons found Rose in the middle of the native landscape, surrounded by four active dens he said the JCs managed year-round. With over 20 years of rattlesnake experience, Rose explained the way a rattlesnake's body functions, how and when mating takes place, what makes a rattlesnake tick, and more. Yet, most importantly, he explained why the roundup happens. From the words of snake charmer Jason Rose, here are five facts I learned from the rattlesnake roundup. If you were to get bit by a rattlesnake, you shouldn't administer a tourniquet, because you could lose that part of your body. Instead, pull out your handy-dandy venom kit, which contains a suction device, and call 911. Don't fall victim to the myth of sucking the venom out yourself. This actually allows the venom to enter your bloodstream faster, especially if you have a cold sore, bit your lip that morning during breakfast, or even just a cavity. Once again, call 911 and try your best to stay calm. Faster heartbeat equals faster bloodstream spread. If a rattlesnake sees a person approaching, their first instinct is to flatten itself and hide, not attack. Since the snake knows a human is too big to eat, it will avoid interaction if possible. The rattler on a rattlesnake's tail is made from a collection of dead skin shed by the snake. Rattlesnakes need water just about every other day, but can go for 2 years without eating. Therefore, it's almost impossible to calculate how old a rattlesnake is. If one 5-year-old snake eats every week while another eats once a month, the one eating every week will be bigger. Only snakes born and raised in captivity can be accurately aged. Rattlesnakes reproduce twice a year, giving live birth to anywhere between 20 and 25 babies each time. According to Rose, half of each litter will survive, meaning each female adds 20 to 25 snakes to the population every year. This is why the roundup continues, to control the numbers. When the week-long event first started in 1958, the rattlesnakes were migrating into town, killing livestock, children, and taking over residential areas. Still, to this day, Rose said the J.C.'s answer house calls where they excavate dens of rattlesnakes from under people's homes. Without the efforts of the Sweetwater J.C.'s, the rattlesnake population would most likely take over the area, making the town inhabitable and dangerous. Note, Rose also said every part of the snake gets used. The meat is fried and sold, the skin becomes accessories and decor, and the venom is donated to the local universities involved in cancer research. This article is entitled GOP Unveils Signature Energy Legislation by Mella McEwen. House Republicans on Tuesday unveiled H.R. 1, the Low Energy Costs Act, which they consider their signature legislative package aimed at increasing domestic energy production and exports while reducing regulatory burdens that impede energy infrastructure expansion and growing the U.S. economy. House Republicans are delivering on our promises to restore American energy dominance by introducing a comprehensive energy package to boost oil and gas production in the Permian Basin and cut costs for all Americans, Representative August Pfluger, the Republican whose District 11 includes much of the Permian Basin, in a statement. I am extremely proud to have worked on this legislation that includes my bill to repeal President Biden's harmful new tax on American oil and gas producers. It is an honor to work on behalf of the men and women of the Permian Basin, the heartbeat of American energy, who have transformed our industry and lifted a billion people out of poverty. Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, commented to the Reporter Telegram by email, "We are very encouraged by the actions of House Majority Leader Scalise, Congressman Pfluger, and many other co-signers of the Lower Energy Costs Act, LECA, introduced today. This bill, significantly numbered H.R. 1, represents sensible, comprehensive energy reform our nation desperately needs." So far, this administration has made it clear their hostility towards reliable American oil from American soil in favor of rainbows and unicorns. Shepard continued, "The LECA is a wide-ranging bill designed to make America and our allies more secure. We were in Washington, D.C. last week and shared our support with members of Congress for this effort. Some of the key initiatives we support include repealing all unnecessary restrictions on the import and export of natural gas, resuming lease sales on federal land, promoting infrastructure such as pipelines, and reforming the broken permitting process for all aspects of our industry. The legislation will be discussed, along with legislation pending in both the Texas and New Mexico legislatures, at the PBPA's membership luncheon Thursday at the Petroleum Club." Shepard also took a moment to congratulate Pfluger on his appointment as chairman of the House Energy Action Team, otherwise known as the HEAT Team. This position is selected by Republican members of Congress and is a big deal to us in the Permian Basin, Shepard wrote. We are fortunate to have such excellent representation for our region. The legislation includes Pfluger's bill to strike the methane tax included in the Inflation Reduction Act. H.R. 1, sponsored by Majority Leader Steve Scalise, Republican Louisiana, and co-sponsored by Energy and Commerce Chair Kathy Morris Rogers, Republican Washington, National Resources Chairman Bruce Westerman, Republican Arkansas, and Transportation and Infrastructure Chairman Sam Graves, Republican Missouri, has two parts. Unleash American Energy prohibits President Biden from banning hydraulic fracturing, repeals all restrictions on the import and export of natural gas, including liquid natural gas, prevents liberal states from blocking interstate infrastructure projects, repeals President Biden's $6 billion natural gas tax that has increased energy bills for families, rolls back President Biden's $27 billion EPA slush fund for Democrat special interests, disapproves of President Biden's canceling of the Keystone XL pipeline, requires the Department of the Interior to resume quarterly lease sales on federal lands, repeals harmful royalties and fee increases imposed on energy production, ensures parity in energy revenue sharing for states with onshore and offshore energy development, requires publication of the 2023-28 offshore oil and gas lease sales plan, sets deadlines for future five-year plans. Reform broken permitting process. Reforms the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, permitting process to streamline federal reviews for all sectors of the economy, including at our international borders. Limits the scope of environmental review under NEPA to reasonably foreseeable and economically feasible impacts. Sets deadlines for completion of NEPA reviews at 1 year for environmental assessments and 2 years for environmental impact statements. Provides certainty by imposing a 120-day deadline on filing litigation on final energy actions concerning energy and mining projects. Requires that certain low-impact activities and activities in previously studied areas on public lands are not major federal actions under NEPA. Ends the abuse of the water quality certification process by streamlining the permitting process under Section 401 of the Clean Water Act and limiting review to water quality impacts only. Enhances America's ability to develop critical energy resources by improving the hazardous waste permitting process at critical energy resource refining and processing facilities. This article is entitled, Midland Has Highest GDP Per Capita Nationwide, by Ben Schaffer. Midland has the highest gross domestic product per capita nationwide, according to a new study by Smartest Dollar. Midland's GDP per capita is $242,730, the study states. The second highest GDP nationwide is in the San Jose, California metropolitan area, which is $210,235. Personal income per capita in Midland is $125,455, the third highest personal income amount in the nation. Odessa's total gross domestic product is $11,399,343. Midland's is $42,035,915. Midland has $40,984,181 in private industry GDP and $1,051,734 in government GDP. Midland is the only Texas metro area ranked inside the top 20 of all cities nationwide for GDP per capita. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Oil Losses Mount with Ample Supply in Focus, by Emmanuel John Milton and Natalia Knizovich, Bloomberg. Oil fell as traders focused on crude supply balances while considering the potential for higher interest rates after inflation accelerated last month. West Texas Intermediate fell as much as 3.2% as crude traders contend with a well-supplied market amid continuing economic certainty. The Organization of Petroleum Export Countries said it sees a modest surplus next quarter during a seasonal lull in demand. There is limited appetite to add significant exposure at present until oil inventory data provides a more positive environment, i.e., oil inventories falling, said Giovanni Stanovo, strategist at UBS. Crude has had a bumpy year so far, as traders juggle concerns over a global economic slowdown and optimism around China's long-awaited demand rebound. Inflation accelerated last month, raising the question as to whether the Federal Reserve would feel pressure to raise rates at its meeting next week, despite ongoing financial turmoil. Meanwhile, crude supplies are expected to remain in surplus until demand takes off. The International Energy Agency releases its snapshot on the outlook for supply and demand on Wednesday. Traders will be watching price action to see if the flat price is supported at recent lows. If buyers don't show up soon and support oil at $70, we could see an air pocket lower to $62, said J.C. O'Hara, the chief technical strategist at Roth MKM. This article is entitled, OPEC Signals Modest Surplus Next Quarter on Demand Lull, by Grant Smith, Bloomberg. Global oil markets appear on track for a modest surplus next quarter amid a seasonal lull in demand, according to OPEC. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries is pumping about 28.92 million barrels of crude a day, or about 300,000 a day more than it expects will be needed in the second quarter, it said in a monthly report. World oil consumption typically eases around this time, a softer patch between the end of winter and the start of the summer driving season. The surplus could be even larger if production from Russia continues to prove resilient to international sanctions, because OPEC's outlook assumes a sharp drop in the country's output next quarter. There exist some upside potential and downside risks to demand, OPEC's Vienna-based research department said in the report on Tuesday. Given the ongoing high level of uncertainty with regard to the timing and extent of a full global economic recovery to pre-pandemic levels, the OPEC coalition will need to remain cautious. Led by Saudi Arabia, OPEC and its partners are restraining output to keep world markets in balance amid a shaky rebound in consumption and fragile economic outlook, which has faltered further this week in the wake of a bank collapse in the U.S. Oil prices plunged below $80 a barrel in London on Monday for the first time in a month. Despite this turmoil, OPEC largely left estimates for average global supply and demand this year unchanged, projecting that world consumption will climb by 2.3 million barrels a day to a record of 101.9 million a day. The group sharply increased estimates for supplies this quarter from Russia, which have remained surprisingly strong despite international sanctions over the invasion of Ukraine and Moscow's threats of retaliatory cuts. OPEC expects Russia will pump 10.9 million barrels a day this quarter, about 620,000 barrels a day more than it estimated in last month's report. This article is entitled, 27-Year-Old Facing Intoxication Assault Charge, by Mercedes Cordero. Jonathan Emilio Chavez Villanueva, 27, is facing an intoxication assault charge after a March 11th incident in South Midland, according to court documents. Midland Police Department officers were dispatched at about 8:10 p.m. in the 2900 block of Rankin Highway in reference to a vehicle crash with a motorcycle. During the investigation, officers determined that a motorcycle traveling southbound near the 2900 block of Rankin Highway on the outside lane slowed down to make a right turn to travel west and was hit from behind by Chavez Villanueva. Chavez Villanueva, who was driving directly behind the motorcycle on the outside lane, failed to control his speed and struck the rear of the motorcycle, causing the driver of the motorcycle to be thrown, according to the arrest affidavit. Chavez Villanueva continued southbound and drove into a private parking lot, hitting a mailbox. Officers observed that Chavez Villanueva exhibited multiple signs of intoxication. When asked how much alcohol he had consumed, he told officers he drank 2 Corona beers, according to the arrest affidavit. Chavez Villanueva was placed under arrest for driving while intoxicated after officers conducted a standardized field sobriety test. He was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, where he consented to a blood sample. The motorcyclist was also taken to MMH, where doctors treated him for a scapula fracture. Due to the motorcyclist's injuries, Chavez Villanueva's charges were upgraded to intoxication assault causing serious bodily injury, a third-degree felony charge. Bond is set at $100,000. This article is entitled MPD, Man Charged with 2 Counts of Sexual Abuse of a Child, by Mercedes Cordero. A 38-year-old man was arrested Friday after a child made an outcry of sexual assault, according to court documents. Alberto Gonzalez was being held Tuesday in Midland County Jail on 2 first-degree felony charges of aggravated sexual assault of a child and continuous sexual abuse of a child under the age of 14. Bond was set at a total of $300,000. A Midland Police Department detective with the Crimes Against Persons Unit was called in reference to a child making an outcry that Gonzalez had been inappropriately touching her. The victim was taken to the Children's Advocacy Center for a forensic interview. The victim stated Gonzalez had been abusing her for the last 7 years. She also stated she was about 7 years old when it started, according to the arrest affidavit. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, March 25th. Estella Carrasco. Estella Carrasco, 93, of Midland, peacefully left us for her heavenly home on March 10th. She was born and raised in Midland and married her husband, Willie Carrasco, on February 22nd, 1947. They were happily married for 65 years before Willie's passing in 2012. She is survived by her children, Willie Carrasco Jr., Adam Carrasco, Velma A. Reyes and husband Manuel Reyes Jr., and Abel Carrasco and wife Mary Carrasco. She was grandmother to 4, great-grandmother to 10, and great-great-grandmother to 1. She is also survived by her sister, Michaela Reyes. Funeral Mass is set for Wednesday, March 15th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Fairview Cemetery. Joyce Smith. Joyce Robinson Smith was born on October 8, 1926, to Bert and Tenny Rosenbaum. She was born and raised in Midland, Texas, and divided her time between the city life of Midland and the country life on the Lazy J Ranch in Upton County. Joyce met and married Sergeant Harold L. Robinson, a member of the Army Air Corps stationed at Sloan Field in Midland, on December 22, 1943. Upon Robbie's death in 1971, Joyce moved to San Angelo and then married Ray Smith. They returned to Midland and opened their own real estate business, Tierra Realtors. Joyce is survived by her son David, Susan, granddaughters Danielle Reynolds Colby and Caitlin Magnino Ryan, as well as four great-grandchildren, son Harold Robinson and family. Graveside services will be held Thursday, March 16th at Rest Haven Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Pamela Ausmus. Pamela Allen Ausmus of Midland passed away on March 10th, so peacefully into the arms of our Lord, and finally back to the arms of her son Christopher Thomas Bearden, who she has missed dearly for the past 26 years. A celebration of life for Pam will be held March 16th at 5:30 p.m. at the branch at Nellie Pickle in Welsh, with Reverend Jan Reed officiating. Dinner to follow. Pam was born on January 3, 1950, in Selma, California, to A.J. Allen and Laverne Vannoy Allen. Pam married Larry Dean Ausmus on November 21, 1998. Pam is survived by her loving husband Larry Ausmus, her loving daughter Christine Beeb, and husband Richard, grandchildren Evelyn and Dylan Beeb, brother Mike Allen and Sally of Lahara, Colorado, sister Belinda Newton and husband Michael, sister-in-law Kim Doolin of Milford, New Hampshire. Pam was preceded in death by her parents A.J. and Laverne Allen and her precious son Christopher Thomas Bearden. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that memorials be donated to Compassus Hospice of Austin or St. Jude Children's Hospital. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Barbara Cartwright. Barbara Alice Wells Cartwright of Midland passed away on March 13th at the age of 89. A memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, March 17th at the Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow the service at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Freddy Gomez Hernandez. Freddy Gomez Hernandez of Midland died March 11th in Midland. Viewing and funeral will be held on March 20th at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Robert Wayne Thompson. Robert Wayne Thompson, 70, passed away March 8th. Funeral service will be Saturday, March 18th at 10 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com.
This is Thoris with the Odessa American News for Wednesday, March the 15th. Headlines read, Council lays out requirements for new city manager. Integrity, communication skills, and experience were among the top qualities the Odessa City Council agreed they'd like to see in the city's next city manager. Six of the council's seven members met with Micah Lunt, from T2, professional counseling, for about 90 minutes Tuesday to start a process that will likely result in a new city manager being hired by mid-July, early August. City Councilman Chris Haney was absent because he was recently hospitalized following a stroke, Councilman Greg Connell said. The council voted 5-2 on December 13th to terminate city manager Michael Marrero and city attorney Natasha Brooks without explanation. Billings and Collections Director Agapito Burnell has been named interim city manager, and senior assistant city attorney Dan Jones was named interim city attorney. T2 was hired the next day by Mayor Javier Javen for $338,000 to help hire Marrero's replacement. Lund asked each city council member to write their top 3 to 5 preferred qualities on sticky notes and then led a discussion on each one. The council members may not have ordered their priorities in exactly the same way, but they came up with several of the same qualities. When different qualities were mentioned, none of them were openly opposed. Mayor Javier Joven, Connell, and council member Denise Swanner said their first priority would be to find someone with integrity. Joven defined that as someone who, quote, does the right thing when no one is looking, end quote. Connell said he always liked the saying, if it's not yours, don't take it. If it's not true, don't say it. If it's not right, don't do it. Councilman Gilbert Vasquez said he'd like to see a city manager with 3 to 5 years experience in a like-sized community, while Councilmember Mark Mata said he wants to see a leader with a servant's heart. Councilmember Steve Thompson said his priority would be to find a city manager who understands the city charter, his duties, and the way things are supposed to be run. His second priority would be to find someone who understands Odessa as a strong manager form of government and wouldn't be intimidated by anyone on the council. He further expressed a desire for the council to be more proactive under a new city manager rather than reactive, and Swanner concurred, noting as her second priority, a city manager with good time management skills. The new city manager should be self-motivated, bring ideas to the table, and constantly be looking for ways to improve things, Swanner said. We have all these surveys and strategies that we don't seem to accomplish what we're supposed to be. So I think that falls into some of that time management and how you manage your time, Swanner said. The council also spent time discussing the importance of communication. I'd like to see an effective communicator, which is different than a good communicator. A good communicator can just talk BS, but an effective communicator can actually say things and with a purpose, Mata said. Hovian stressed he wants someone who can provide unbiased communication to the council, mid-management, and staff members. After the meeting, Hovian explained what he meant about integrity and communication. I can only speak for myself, and I think integrity is very integral to any relationship, whether it's business or a marriage. It isn't a good marriage if there's no integrity, Joven said. The other priority is communication. Unbiased information going back and forth is what helps council to administer and policy. That's one of the main basics of council, but we need to know what we need to know. If we don't know, we don't know. Asked to explain unbiased communication, Joven said he wants someone to disseminate one message. I'm seeking a city manager that's able to disseminate information unbiased, not pick this person, Joven said. Whether it's a business or private enterprise, Joven said, if everybody's on a different page, if you don't have unity, you're going in different directions or you're staying stagnant. Asked if he meant consistent, Joven laughed. Unbiased is real. Consistent? You can communicate consistently, but you can do it unbiased because what I'm basically saying is if you're not informing your board equitably, you're not giving the same information. One message, one communication. You're not keeping everyone on the same page, Joven said. When discussing a third priority, The mayor said he'd like someone who has experience with finance, budgeting, city charters, Texas state statutes, and human resources. Mata, Hoven, Swanner, and Connell agreed they'd like someone who will invest in the city's employees by promoting training, education, and growth, while Thompson said he'd like a city manager who can form a team with his assistant city managers. Vasquez said it was important for him the city have an effective city manager and someone who will represent Odessa with dignity and professionalism. To sum up, Lund said, the council expects a city manager with strong integrity. If it's not right, don't do it. If it's not true, don't say it. If it's not yours, don't take it. The ability to do the right thing when no one is looking, and then I will act with the utmost integrity, pursue my work in an honest and ethical manner. I will obey the letter and spirit of the law. I will lead by example. I will take responsibility for my actions and consider their effect on others. In terms of qualification, Thompson said he'd like to see a city manager with a master's degree in public administration, and several of the council members said they'd like to see someone with at least a 4-year degree, but noted it could be in finance or business instead of public administration. Most agreed they'd like to see someone with at least 3 to 5 years' experience in more than one city of 50,000 to 150,000 people. Preferably, that person would have experience managing an employee pool of 890 or more, which is how many the city currently has. Education, hugely important. It adds to that diverse knowledge and different ways of thinking. I have not seen very many city manager positions have a specific area of study delineated. There will be a minimum level of education, and it will say something like, in public administration, business administration, or a related degree, Lund said. Hovian, however, said he was worried about limiting the pool of potential candidates. He is not opposed to hiring someone from the private sector or without those specific degrees. I want to keep it vast to try to get as many applicants as we can. It'd be a good problem to have 100 applicants that are qualified from throughout the state. That'd be a good problem. But if we narrowed it down to 3, who did we cut out? I just want to be careful. I'm not discouraging the city council to put those criteria in, just cautioning them, don't narrow the line, Hoven said after the meeting. Hoven acknowledged that by not requiring specific degrees, Burnell could theoretically be named city manager. He's free to apply. Never said that he couldn't. Will he apply? I haven't talked to him about it, but he earned an excellent reputation during his time as the Billings and Collection Department head, Hoven said. According to Burnell's job application, he started as a Midland Animal Control Officer in October 1994 before becoming the Assistant Director in July 1996. He left that position in March 2000. He became the Director of Animal Control for the City of Mansfield in April 2001 before accepting the job as Billing and Collection Manager with the City of Odessa in April 2006. The council was asked by Lund to take a job quiz by Thursday morning. Then they'll meet at 3 p.m. Tuesday to finalize their priorities. Susie Price, a hiring assessment expert from Georgia, was unable to participate in Tuesday's meeting as expected because Jones determined a Zoom meeting would violate state laws. It's unknown if she'll be able to attend next week's meeting. After the T2 meeting, the council went into its normally scheduled work session. However, a planned discussion on fentanyl was postponed until March the 28th because Tony Sertilis, the scheduled speaker, had a family emergency. Odessans hope Schlemmeyer benefits from state funds. Ector County Airport Advisory Board Chairman Mark Merritt sipped his coffee while watching airplanes land and take off at Schlemmeyer Airport. He estimates the price tag to finish all airport improvements at $50 million. Merritt noted that a majority of that wish list, $45 million, would be spent on asphalt replacement. Schlemmer Airport isn't getting a $50 million ticket to complete all renovations. However, airport officials hope a chunk of those funds, $15 million, will come during the 88th Texas legislative session for improvement projects. I know $15 million is a lot of money, but our dream list is probably about $50 million, Merritt said. When you start looking that we have over 3 million square feet of asphalt, it primarily all needs to be replaced. Merritt said he has been part of the airport board since 2015. He said he has seen the airport grow during that time. Merritt also said more than 90% of the flights are business. Personal use is a little less than 10%. As Merritt explained, there are two different flight schools at Schlemmer, one for planes and one for helicopters. You have people coming in for mapping, pipeline patrols, gas sniffing, and medical, Merritt said. A lot of medical flights are coming in from Fort Stockton, Pecos, and surround areas that need to bring patients here. The patients that can't be handled here, they get moved to Lubbock, Dallas, or Houston. However, Merritt said the easiest way to see that growth is fuel sales. Merritt said fuel sales in 2015 were around 350,000 gallons, and that number has nearly doubled to about 700,000 in 2022. The hope that Merritt has for Schlemmer Airport is to hit 1 million gallons in fuel sales within the next 5 years. Merritt said most of the airport funds come from grants from the FAA that flows through the Texas Department of Transportation. Merritt noted the FAA doesn't want the airport to rely on grants. To remedy that situation and reduce the number of FAA grants, Merritt said airport contracts are scheduled to be renegotiated in 2024. Merritt believes with a better contract, the airport can cover its annual expenditures and also save a little money for renovations. The airport generates revenue, Merritt said. One of the grand assurances is that revenue generated by the airport is used on the airport. You can't put that in the general operations budget. It has to stay on the airport. If the $15 million for improvements project is approved during the 88th Texas legislative session, Merritt said, the item on the checklist would be new runway lighting. Merritt estimated the total cost to fix the lighting could be $1 million to $2 million. Merritt said next on the checklist is upgrading low-graded asphalt areas. Merritt believes with the remaining $10-plus million for improvement projects, the airport's overall grade can reach a B grade. Before we can do the asphalt, we have lighting, runway lights, approach lights, taxiway lights, Merritt said. They haven't been maintained to the standard that we need to keep the airport safe. That's the first thing right off the top. Merritt also squashed the worry about Schlemmer turning into a freight hub. The cost to transform Schlemmer into a freight hub would be about $100 million, which Merritt said he believes isn't economically feasible. Merritt said he maintains the airport needs to get better, not bigger. It's not really an option, he said, about Schlemmer transforming to a freight hub. That was a thought at one time. After you start looking at what all is involved to make that happen, it's like a lot of business ideas that you get in that it sounds good at first, then reality sets in. Landgraf co-authors fentanyl crisis legislation. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, a Republican from Odessa, has co-authored legislation to beef up law enforcement's response to the fentanyl crisis and create harsher penalties for fentanyl dealers. The fight against fentanyl is real, and we are all on the front lines whether we realize it or not, Landgraf said. This lethal drug has infiltrated every community in Texas. My heart breaks after talking with the families of West Texans who have lost their lives to fentanyl. Sadly, I've had several of those conversations in the last few weeks. I'm committed to fighting to secure the border and crack down on smugglers and dealers. Fentanyl-related deaths reported in Texas increased 89% from 20 to 21 since Operation Lone Star began in March of 2021. The Texas Department of Public Safety has seized more than 361 million lethal doses of fentanyl across the state, enough fentanyl to kill every man, woman, and child in the United States. In 2021, Landgraf was part of the successful effort to increase state funding for border security to $3 billion for 2022-2023.
Discover Odessa, Visit Midland teaming up for bus tour. Discover Odessa is partnering with Visit Midland in celebration of National Travel and Tourism Week 2023 for the Sister City bus tour from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. April 29th. Each city, Odessa and Midland, will host the beginning of the tour in this own city, end in their sister city, and head back home. Attendees will tour the attractions that Odessa and Midland both have in common, which are their oldest residence homes and the Bush family homes. They will make four stops throughout the tour and learn about the history behind each local attraction. There will be fun prizes, snacks made from local businesses, and much more. The tour, which is for all ages, will be guided by the Discover Odessa team and Visit Midland team. Discover Odessa is excited to celebrate the 2023 National Tourism Week with Visit Midland. Our objective is to promote each other's cities and things we have in common. Each city tour will feature their oldest resident home and the Bush family home located in their city. Attendees will visit both Midland and Odessa attractions. It will be a day filled with lots of knowledge, fun prizes, and giveaways. Monica Schoner, director of Discover Odessa, said in a news release, the Odessa bus will make stops in the following order: White Pool House, Odessa; the George W. Bush Boyhood Home, Odessa; the Brown Dorsey Home, Midland; the George W. Bush Childhood Home, Midland. Ticket prices: $5 for ages 12 and under, $10 for ages 13 and up. Seating is limited to 50 spots per bus tour. The Sister City bus tour in Odessa will load the bus in Odessa Chamber of Commerce parking lot located at 700 North Grant Avenue, Odessa. Ella Noel hosting Spring Break Drop-In. If you find yourself with some free time this spring break, you can stop by the Ella Noel Art Museum for Spring Break Drop-In for exhibits, events, and some free books from the Little Free Library. Tuesday was the first day. Admission is free, educator Annie Stanley said. We always try to have something going on or just remind people that we're open because we know a lot of families can't leave for spring break and they're looking for things to do around town, Stanley said. The museum is now in the Presidential Archives at 4919 East University Boulevard. The Ellen Noel is undergoing a revamp and renovation, Stanley said. They have been in the Presidential Archives building since September 2022. This is a beautiful building we've settled in. We haven't had to cancel anything. We're doing all the same amount of programming that we did before. I think it's working out really well, she added. A couple of the current exhibits are Thomas Hart Benton and the Navy and Censorship Controversy and Scandal, both of which run through May 28th. Both are on loan from the Navy Art Collection. A book talk is scheduled for 6 p.m. March 23rd for those 18 and older. It's on Boom or Bust, Narrative, Life, and Culture from the West Texas Oil Patch. It will be a discussion with Chris Bartlett, Daniela Garcia, and Edith Vandervoort. A bookmaking workshop is set for 1:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. March 25th. The cost is $50 and spots are limited. It offers a chance to create a unique book that can be used for a travel journal, baby book, or special gift. The instructor is Kate Mahoney, and all supplies will be provided. A wearable art workshop is scheduled for 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. April 15th. $50 registration in advance only. Spots are limited. The next community art day is 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. April 15th, and it's free. It's a chance to help celebrate spring and find out about upcoming summer programs such as TARP and summer art camps. There will be art stations and visits from community partners such as the Odessa High School Harp Ensemble, the Ector County ISD Early Childhood Program, and Basin PBS. A Penguin Random House representative will be on hand April 27th. This is Christy, and I'm continuing to read Odessa American for March 15th, 2023. Parks and Rec to host barbecue cook-off. The City of Odessa Parks and Recreation, in partnership with the Odessa Jackalopes, will be hosting its inaugural Barbecue Masters and Cornhole Bracket Battle on March 18th at the Ector County Coliseum. This event will feature March Madness, tailgating with hospitality tents, and five large-screen TVs for guests to watch their favorite college basketball team, the press release detailed. The tailgating section is free and open to the public, and the Jackalopes will have concession stands available for guests. The event will also feature a barbecue cook-off sanctioned by the International Barbecue Cookers Association, one of the first for the Parks and Recreation Department. Barbecue teams can cook three types of meat in the cook-off and will be competing for over $4,000 worth in prizes. Teams will also receive four tickets to the Jackalope Games that night, courtesy of Odessa Jackalopes. Barbecue cook-off. The entry fee for the barbecue tournament is $150 for all meat categories. There will be 31 spots for the cook-off. Teams can be any size. The tray pickup and cooks meeting will happen at 7 p.m. Friday. Turn-in time on Saturday, 12 o'clock p.m. chicken, 1:30 p.m. pork spare ribs, 3 p.m. brisket. Meats to be cooked: half chicken, complete with wing, breast, thigh, and leg. Pork spare ribs, 8 individual pork spare ribs. Brisket, 8 full slices. Cornhole tournament. This event also features a cornhole tournament where guests of any skill level are welcome to join the cornhole tournament for $30 and compete for some great prizes. Registration starts at 8:15 a.m. and the tournament begins at 9 a.m. First place prize, custom cornhole boards. Second place prize, cornhole bags and a $75 gift card. Third place prize is a $50 gift card. Proceeds from the barbecue cook-off and cornhole tournament will benefit the City of Odessa Parks Foundation.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.